to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Ken Brand. He is the author of Less Blah Blah, More Aha. The subtitle of the book is How Social Savvy Real Estate Agents Become Trusted, Preferred, Referred, and Rewarded. But don't let that fool you and think it's only directed towards the real estate agent, because it's not. The book and this conversation is full of aha tidbits that will help you succeed in any business you're in. But before we talk to Ken, I'd like you to know a little bit about him, Ken Brand. As a leader, mentor, speaker, parent, amateur athlete, real estate sociologist, husband, and transmedia anthropologist, wow, Ken has been involved in more than 16,700 real estate transactions since 1978, San Diego, Austin, Aspen, and the Woodlands in Texas. When not helping, Ken's typically floor burning up the racquetball court or unearthing third gravitating bodies in films, books, social media, and the majesty of life's daily spectacle. Ken Brand is the sales manager of Prudential Gary Green, Realtors' multi-award-winning research forest office in the Woodlands in Texas. That's just out of Houston. Ken also presents social media events, is a guest contributor for one of the nation's most read on online real estate agent magazines, and it's called agentgenius.com, and teaches sales and business development classes for Prudential Gary Realtors in Houston and the Wizard Academy in Austin, Texas. Hi, Ken.
Good morning.
Good morning. Wow, unearthing third gravitating bodies. What does that mean?
Well, that's a good question. Sometimes it kind of confuses me a little bit. But basically, unearthing third gravitating bodies is when I'm watching a movie or I'm reading a book or really kind of evaluating anything that really moves me or I think is really striking or unusual, or why does that really connect, or why is that really popular. So a third gravitating body is something that doesn't really fit with what you're reading or what you're seeing or the movie by itself, but because it's been interjected into the medium, whatever it happens to be, it makes the whole thing work. So it seems like, why is that there? That doesn't seem to like that would be a good idea, but oh, it makes everything else in that piece, whatever you have to be watching, work, which is really kind of a hard thing to describe, but that's what that is. Why do things work?
And I understand, and after reading your book, you also put a lot of those into your book, so I encourage the listeners to check it out and see what third gravitating bodies really are in as far as the book goes. Now, Ken, the book really is targeting real estate agents, but, you know, I was a real estate agent at one time, and also by reading this, I really found that although it is targeted towards the agent, anybody can get so much information out of it. And I wonder if you just kind of did that on purpose, or is it really because these principles will sort of, you know, help anybody in any type of a sales position?
Right. So that's a good question, and I think that your observation is exactly right. So I wrote the book primarily for real estate agents because that's the business that I'm in. That's the business that I know, and I've been in it for 33 years. It's not really, as I describe in the book, but we're really not in the real estate business. We're really in the people business and sharing and listening and solving problems and serving. Real estate kind of comes at the end. And so that type of experience, I think what we're seeing today all across the globe and all across America with all of our goods and services is that, you know, like really good service is kind of the entry card these days. What people are really looking for is an experience and how they feel about what's going on. So when I wrote this book talking about sales and persuasions and how to build trust and top mind awareness, what not only did I take my own personal experiences and what I've learned from top agents and other leaders in the real estate business over the decades, really over 30 years, kind of the best of, but also I've studied and I've observed what other successful people have done in other consumer service type fields, whether it be, you know, the ones that we hear about, the iconic brands. You know, how does Starbucks sell? How does Nike sell? How does Virgin Airlines sell? What about Google? And locally, we have some restaurants, and I talk about Fleming's, for example. Why do so many people love Fleming's Steakhouse when they can get a steak anywhere? So really, it's a kind of a a collection of the best of what works with human beings, how to connect, how to build, you know, how to earn trust, and how to persuade, and how to position yourself so that someone needs to make a choice about the product or service or who they should call on, that you would be the logical choice because of the certain actions and steps and behaviors that you've exhibited, you know, as you conduct your business in your personal life, like in your professional life as well.
And that makes so much sense. See, when I started the business, it was not anything to do with real estate. I actually took a real estate agent as my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And because I just felt that she had so much of the qualities that you're talking about. Now, also you're talking about what is actually in your book in Chapter 7, the Golden Rule 2.0. And I would like you to just talk a little bit about that Golden Rule 2.0 because it's a little different than what we know it as.
Right. Well, I think, you know, I grew up going to Sunday school, and so my mom and my dad, and at Sunday school, they taught us the Golden Rule, which is, which I think everybody's familiar with,
uh-huh.
which is treat other people the way that you want to be treated. And it sounds great, and it does work, and we use that a lot in how we, I guess, nurture and build our relationships and interact with people. These days, though, in the business, we have to tweak it a little bit, so it's kind of the 2.0 version, which would be do unto others as they would have done unto them. And I think with that, so what I'm getting at there is, as salespeople, we have a tendency to deliver our services or treat people the way that we want to be treated or the way that our last client seemed to really like it or this seems to work. And so we're kind of serving people the way we want to be served or the way someone else has wanted to be served. But to be really successful and to be really appreciated and valued and preferred and referred and those things is that we have to be able to deliver whatever it is that we're doing the way that our customer, our client actually wants it, not how we did it before, not how it worked before, not how I like it. And so in the book, I use a little example. You and I were, you know, let's say we're attending a class at the Wizards Academy. We decided to go out to dinner. I say, I'm going to buy drinks, and I like Crown and On the Rocks, and so I buy you, I say, let me get you a drink, and I buy you what I like. Well, maybe what you like is maybe you don't drink. Maybe what you want is a glass of white wine, or maybe you want a martini. So I would think that I was doing a good thing, but I'm not. I'm just kind of being selfish and, or kind of short-sighted and doing it my way. So I think that as we interact with people, customers, clients, prospects, people we love, family members and so on, we need to keep in mind that what's important, that people really don't care what we want or how we do things or what works with someone else. We all have this kind of craving for give it to me the way that I want it, the way that works for me, the way that's convenient for me, the way that I'll enjoy it, and then I will buy what you have or I will hire what you have or refer what you have or, you know, I'll enjoy it more. And so that's kind of what the idea of the 2.0 version is more of a focus on them instead of ourselves.
And that is so true. That is so true because, really, we are providing the service for them.
Right.
And we need to provide the service the way they want it. Otherwise, they're going to go to somebody else.
That's true.
I mean, that's the bottom line. So, Ken, does this also, like, what changed? At one time, I remember, you know, any business workshop that I would go to, we used the 1.0 version, but now it's the 2.0. What changed? Is it because things have changed, let's say, in the real estate, or is it the people have changed? Is it because of the recession that we just have to, you know, try to get the clients or customers? What is it that changed?
I think that culturally, right, so I've been in sales for 30 years, and I know In the not too distant past, we could succeed and impress and attract by buying our way there through, you know, say, by paying for it. So big billboards, big ads, telling people how we were going to do it, what we did. Most of the conversations were about us and what we were going to do for somebody. And I think that, did work well for a long time. But then gradually, and maybe it's been accelerated by the recent recession, where we're kind of living now in a trust-starved society. You know, don't bullshit me. Don't try to sell me. Just tell me, you know, what's going on. And I think we feel that way because of all the calamity that's gone on in the Wall Street with people's retirement accounts, and, you know, in politics, foreclosures. It seems like, you know, everything is chaotic. And so therefore we're much more, I think as a society, we're a little more skeptical. You know, we don't really believe what people tell us anymore. And I don't know that we have that response always in a conscious way, but it's a feeling kind of deep down inside, like, yeah, I've heard that before. Here we go again. And so now what people want to know is, I want to know that your solution is real and that it'll work for me specifically. You know, not a platitude, not what you did before, not how great you are. Right? What I want is you to listen to, you know, what my needs are and what's going on, and then tailor it that way. And so I think it's partly brought on by the change in the effect that some of these the chaotic times have had on people, and then because competition is so super keen. So not only do you have people that are more wary now than they've ever been, naturally we all are, but also if you want to stay in business, then you have to be a keen competitor these days. So the competition's at an all-time high because some people just can't afford to go out of business. So they have to modify what they're doing and how they're doing it. So previously, if everybody was singing the same song and trying to buy attention and telling people, you know, that they had the best solution and this is how it was going to be, then, you know, people kind of had to go along with it. But now there's competitors that are offering better solutions that are tailored to specific needs. And they're listening more than they're talking, and they're focused on what can I do for others rather than, you know, it's all about me. And so the competition, that bar has raised. And so now if you're you and me and everybody else, if we're not on that track, then our competition is going to eat our lunch because this is what because people have more of a choice now. That's what I think.
Ken, you said that, you know, advertising has changed, and at one time it was like blah, 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 you know,
right,
like your book title, but now it's different. And let's talk about that different. What do you see the trends are, and what do you see that really people want rather than that blah, blah, blah? And, you know, I'm just going to, before you answer that, I just got an email this morning, and I was looking, I went to the website because this is a, she was selling a program or a book, and I went to it, and I had to scroll down for pages and pages and all that, you know, highlighted stuff and all the stuff that the testimonials, and way, way down at the bottom, I could order the book. Mm-hmm. Now, that's so last century, and I forget there's a special, you know, name for that type of advertising,
right,
and I know that it no longer works.
Right.
So let's talk about that. What does work?
I think what works, if you're going to do, well, let's. So you have traditional broadcast monologue type marketing advertising, the traditional advertising where I run an ad and I'm just talking, and then I hope that somebody responds to it. And usually I'm talking about myself in this ad. I'm great. I'm number one. We sell more homes than anybody else. I'm the number one agent for the first quarter. Me, 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 me. So I think that the focus of advertising, so we don't like that. That's the blah, blah. That's kind of the selfish selling. Let me tell you about me, 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 and more about me. And it doesn't work in real life. Right? It annoys people at a party, and it annoys people in advertising these days. So traditional media was mostly about us when we were doing it, and it was broadcast monologue just one way. And so now the trend seems to be this thing called transmedia, which is storytelling across multiple platforms and multiple medias. And so in the past, so what that means is in the past we might, a traditional campaign might be, I'm going to do some newspaper ads, I'm going to do some direct mail, I'm going to, you know, some direct mail type postcards, maybe some catalogs, might do some radio, but everything's kind of blasted out there. Now with the transmedia idea across multiple platforms, we're going to be telling stories, but more importantly, rather than bragging about how great we are, we need to listen to what's going on with our clients. So these multiple platforms now, which is really you and I and the listeners could call a form of marketing and advertising and promotion, but really it's a form of listening and conversation and sharing. So the multiple platforms is now, you and I are engaging on Facebook and I'm paying attention to what's going on in your life, Irene, and I'm commenting on the things that are relevant to you in your life, and I'm sharing things that will help you in your business or with your family. You do a lot of that, which I appreciate. Then you're creating top mind awareness. And if I have a need for someone to help me promote my books because I have a relationship with you and because I see that you're mostly interested in sharing than telling me about all the people you've helped, then I say, well, Irene is the person that I think I want to help me because I like her style. Mm-hmm. And marketing and promotion before never would have done that. We wouldn't have that connection. So it's changed in the sense that now we can use platforms like Facebook. If we're going to share documents and presentations, you know, we can use a platform like SlideShare. We can share videos on Facebook and on YouTube. We can share our pictures on Flickr. And so this allows us to touch more people in different ways, in ways that they like to be touched. Like, I very rarely read the newspaper anymore, but I'm on Facebook quite a bit. So if someone tried to contact me or tried to share with me what they were doing in a newspaper ad, well, I would never see it, but I would see it on Facebook. So I think that's kind of what changed, is we're listening more, we're sharing what's relevant to individuals, and we're doing it more in a storytelling fashion than kind of a rat-tat-tat-tat, I'm great, I'm good, here's me, here's this, right? So I think people can relate to it because it's relevant, you know, they pay attention to it, and therefore we're able to fire off some, you know, brain synapses in their head, and which helps them remember us when they have a need for whatever particular service that we're providing.
And you just said something really important, Ken. They remember us.
Right.
And that it ends up being the bottom line, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that I talk about in the book, which really is, you know, DNA has lots of little strands and all, but one of the most important factors in our being successful, if you're in a personal services business where you're kind of dealing one-on-one with people, is this idea of you have to create top-mind awareness. And what that is, it's like a first mental recall in a particular category. So my category would be real estate. And so when someone has a need, right, oh, we just got transferred, we need to move, who should we call? Then there are hundreds, like in my market, there are probably 800 agents. In Houston, there's 20,000 agents that they can think of. If they don't think of me first or second, right, then I'm screwed. I don't have a chance at that business. So I have to create top-mind awareness so that when there's a real estate need, and people don't move all the time, but someone might say, Irene, who do you know? I have to sell my house. So who do you know that, you know, can help me out? So people refer each other. Again, if I don't pop into their head, right, I'm screwed on that business. So the memory is really important, and the way we create top-mind awareness, which I talk about in the book, is through relevant, remarkable, and repetitious conversation, you know, connection, engagement, sharing, and listening, which we can do across these multiple platforms. But if people don't think about you, they're thinking about somebody else, and that's the person who's going to get that call or get that opportunity. And so it's key. Yeah, that's so important.
It is so important. And I'm just kind of smiling because you're calling it top mind awareness. But yet some of the examples are what we used to call word of mouth.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk word of mouth. And how do we instill that for people to be really excited and to tell others about it?
Right. I think what one of the challenges, we're talking about, the first thing that we think of is, okay, what can I do that's going to be the knockout punch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but rarely is there a knockout punch. What it is, it's a collection of, you know, if we're using a boxing analogy, I don't know if it's a good one for this, but it's body blows, right? So it's not a matter. It's like if we've had an experience where you need a favor from a friend, you've been meaning to call the friend and to make it easier, and then you didn't do it, and now you got to call your friend and ask for a favor. And you go, man, I wish I would have laid a little bit of groundwork because this is coming out of left field. So there's no knockout punch. What it is consistent over time sharing. So in my context of a real estate agent, if I want people to talk about me, I want them to talk about me as someone who's trustworthy, reliable, and someone who shares, who's a giver more than a taker. So what that means is, and I'm going to use Facebook as an example because it's a platform that allows me to touch a lot of people, is that I have to share things with people that are relevant. So if I'm on Facebook and I see, so what I'll share is, I'm not going to say, I just took another listing, I just sold another house, I'm the greatest real estate agent. I might share something that's happening in our community with the other people that live in our community. It might be about, you know, get your season pool passes for your kids. Here's 101 things to do this summer with your children. Here's a new concert that's coming to the pavilion. Here's a child safety, cyber safety class being given by the sheriff's department. So I'm sharing things like that And then when I see that people are actually going to be doing something, so I see on Facebook, hey, maybe they're taking a trip to Destin. Well, then I might contact them separately from Facebook. I might send an email that says, hey, if you're going to Destin, make sure you go to Billy Bob's jet skis on the harbor. Here's a link for that. And make sure you get the crab claws over at the back porch restaurant. You know, your kids will love that. They can go play in the, you know, in the sand while you're having a cocktail watching the sun go down. So what I'm doing is if I want people to talk about me, I have to not talk about me. I have to talk about them and things that are going on in their life. That's that relevant part. And then share things that will benefit them. And then what I know is when I share something, let's say if they have children, I share something important that's relevant to their children's safety, then I know what they might do is take that link, let's say, to the cyber safety for their kids. Everybody worries about that. And then they might share it on their Facebook page, which says this came from Ken Brand. Or they might be, maybe they're going to Bunko tonight, and they're talking to their friends about their kids and, you know, who got the new iPhone for their, you know, 12-year-old son or whatever. And then they go, oh, there's this cyber safety thing that Ken sent me. You know, I'll send it to you when I get back. So that is how we can create some word of mouth. And I would sum it all up by saying, don't talk about yourself. Talk about others, or talk about what others are talking about in terms of commenting, and share things that are relevant to other people, even if it's outside of your particular specialty. So you want to be known as the helpful, sharing, and caring type person in all things, not just your particular one-dimensional business.
And you said something important, Ken, in all things. And I'm so in agreement with that. You're very much into social media and, of course, talked a lot about Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And also had an opportunity, and I want the listeners to know this, that I personally took a workshop from Ken on social media. And I tell you, I learned so much in, I think it was 2 days, wasn't it, Ken?
Yeah. Well, you're a pro now.
I tell you. Well, it's all because of what I learned in your workshop. And I know that you're a real advocate. But as I'm standing back, too, and looking at some of the stuff that goes on Facebook, it is just a lot of noise. And a lot of people are not using it to what you're saying. It's still all about me, 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 me. And listen to me. And they don't engage in others as the way you're talking. And I just really feel that the method that you use is that top-mind awareness.
Right. What I find fascinating because as I talk to a lot of people about social media in general, it's kind of still relatively new. A lot of people are using it, not using it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, people feel, I think, that they behave on these in cyberspace the way they mostly wouldn't do in real life, right? So if you and I were at an event together or maybe a small party or whatever, I wouldn't roll in and say, hey, let me tell you about my listing. Wouldn't do it. Nobody cares. It's rude, right? But I'll roll in and into a social media platform and do it. And you know what? We're all guilty of it. A little is okay,
mm-hmm.
right? That's human. That's we're going to do that. That's kind of one of the things that we can do that's beneficial about these types of platforms. But you have to be consciously aware of how you're being perceived and how you're treating others and kind of behave the same way you would in person. And, you know, then you'll be okay. But for some reason, you know, we get caught up and we're just talking to a computer and don't realize it has the same impact as real life.
The thing is, one good thing is the computer doesn't answer us.
Right.
But it's really scary if we start talking to ourselves.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Ken Brand, author of Less Blah Blah, More Aha. Wow, a lot of information so far, isn't there? As you can see, Ken is very well versed, and it's obvious his success depends much on his knowledge and experience. Stay tuned, because there is just so much more from Ken. And, oh, by the way, Ken's website address is brandcandid.com.
Right. And the other thing is, which kind of, you know, we think we're talking to a computer, is that, you know, when I'm talking about, we have to have conversations with what's relevant about people. That means, you know, clicking the like button, you know, on Facebook's like smiling at someone. You know, sharing a link is actually sharing. And I think what happens is, you know, that when we get online, we just talk more about ourselves. And it's kind of like if we went to a party, and then we either talked all about ourselves, or sometimes we go online and we don't do anything. And if we went to a party or a social, you know, gathering, we wouldn't stand in a corner and just watch what everybody was doing and never say a word, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that nobody goes on Facebook and says, oh, here's some pictures of my kids at the swim meet, and then hopes that everybody ignores them, right? And that nobody says a word, and there's just crickets, right? People, you know, crave a sense of significance. And that's what makes Facebook work. So if you fill that need for people by acknowledging their existence and commenting and sharing with them, then that's remarkable behavior, because so few people do it, and that's what creates that top mind awareness, word of mouth, and so on.
It's interesting. It just brought to mind over the weekend, we have this little 3-pound Pomeranian, and she's 13 years old, and she has no teeth, and she can't hear at all, and she's hardly, you know, sighted.
Right.
And she was sleeping in my office, and I took a picture and put it on Facebook and said, our office guard dog. And amazed how many comments I got and likes. And that's exactly what you're talking about. This had nothing to do with my business, but a lot of people made comments. And it was just this interaction. All of a sudden, I had this little party going. And we were talking about my guard dog, my 3-pound guard dog. And that's what social media is all about, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, it's just really the connection with each other. And another thing that makes it so powerful is because we like to do people that we with people and businesses that we trust,
mm-hmm.
right? And we trust the familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I think that I know you and kind of what you're about, then I can trust you.
Yeah.
And that, which means that I might recommend you, or maybe if I need your services, I'll use them. But if you're a stranger to me, then I don't trust you, because we don't trust strangers, right? We've been raised that way our whole lives. And so it's very hard to earn that business or have someone recommend a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
Camp, chapter 9, are fear and doubt strangling your success? And then you have this little quote by Dudley Nichols, fear is the highest fence. Fear.
Right.
I think that's way up on top of the stress list, isn't it?
Yes. I think particularly when we're in a personal services businesses, whether it's real estate or others, where you're interacting with people and you're, you know, and you have a chance to be rejected, like, no, I don't need what you have, I don't want what you have, or a chance to be criticized, meaning I don't think it's good enough, I don't think you're good enough, we think that we're not prepared and we'll look bad, you know, because we're not as good as we could be. So, you know, it's, we all have these, you know, fear feelings and these doubts about what we're doing. Man, I've had a ton of them with this book. but we all have them.
Yeah.
And it's paralyzing. And if we can't overcome, right, our own fears or replace our fearful thoughts with empowering thoughts just to get off the dime, you know, then all of the good things that we might accomplish disappear. So in the book, in the first, I kind of divide it up into threes. And the first third is really kind of about human behavior and what we're trying to accomplish. And then in the second part, it's kind of getting out of our way. What you're talking about
mm-hmm.
is that fear fence. How do we climb that fence? You know, we don't, it's not that we ignore it like it doesn't exist. No, we know it's there. Right? And actually, sometimes it can motivate us and help us, some of the fears that we have. But we have to, like, acknowledge it, understand it, and then we have to be able to take action anyway. And in the book, I have some ideas on how to self-talk our way through and over and under, you know, and around some of these fearful obstacles that keep us from doing the good things that we might do.
Glasser, I believe, is the I'm just thinking here that when we were talking about fears and the rejection, and you mentioned needing to belong, and I know that that is one of the in the hierarchy of needs that the need to belong is really important. And this is where, you know, the fear-based just comes in, and if we just feel that rejection. But you certainly, what I like about this book, and I'm just at this chapter right now, that you actually ask us, and it's kind of a journal workbook kind of a thing. I'm just going to read this to our listeners. To make this exercise relevant and real for you, please fill in the blanks. And for the first one is, making the in-person prospecting contact, I know I should. I fear, and then blank, and we have to fill that out. This is really important because this is really pinpointing, okay, so I've got all these fears. Let's address them.
Right.
Yeah. And
yeah, I think that, and I've got a few in there, but what I found is that, you know, it's one thing to read or to learn or study or watch and go, yeah, that's a good idea. I should start doing that, and I will as soon as I wake up tomorrow. And so what's helpful, I think, is to, you know, when we have a conscious awareness of a particular fear, and I kind of walk in the book, like you're saying, walk through a few of the most common ones here, where we really sit and think. And I think that in today's super busy world, we've got so much going on, and it's so important that we keep moving and make things happen, that rarely do we get a chance to really sit down and think mm-hmm. about what we're thinking about and how it's impacting us and how we can change things for the better. And that's really kind of the purpose of that. Is let's just pause a minute. You know, you bought the book. You're spending your time reading it. You're trying to improve yourself. Let's just pause a minute, mm-hmm. right, and think about some of these things individually, and then let's address how to correct a couple of them at a time, you know, and then, so that you're always making, you know, forward progress.
Oh, you mean we don't have to address all our fears at one time?
Well, I don't know. I think you probably could, but I found no. They don't go away. It takes a long time to create new habits and new outlooks. So we might have to wrestle with the same fear every day for, you know, 21 days.
You're funny. 21 days, and I'm thinking, gosh, it's going to take me that long to get over my fear.
Well, that would be a minimum. Results may vary. It could be 21 years. Could be.
Results might vary. That's your disclaimer.
Right. I know the
see
same
that a lot in advertising.
Yeah, the same stuff scares the crap out of me. Some of it I've just realized, you know what, I'm never going to get over that. So let's move on to the next thing. You know.
Exactly. Acknowledge it and move on.
Right.
And work around it, and eventually we do find ways. And before we know it, it's like, oh, this isn't even a fear anymore.
Right.
So, Ken, a lot of times we sort of, you know, we're in a service, or in your case, you're talking to real estate agents or anybody that's selling, or dealing with people or having a business, or we just sort of, all of a sudden, we come to a point, it's like, oh, I am so stuck. I am so stuck. And I feel I'm stuck because I'm just swamped with work, and because of the recession, I can't afford to hire anybody to help me. What do I do?
Right. Well, we have, I'll use the real estate business kind of as an example, but I think it applies to everybody because it's a pure pay for performance. We only succeed if we win, and so a couple of things happen, and this is, there's a difference between what I'm aware of and what I can really change. And then there's conditions that maybe I can't change. You know, if you don't have the money, you just don't have the money, you're going to have to figure out what to do. But what I find is that generally a couple of things are happening. One is that when we're operating from a base of fear about what's going on, then it's really hard for us to take really good care of other people, which is critical to our success because we're focused on ourselves. Now, it's really hard to know, you know, that I might not have enough money at the end of the month, and if I don't meet this quota, I've got a problem, but I got to put that aside and deliver and focus on others. But that's kind of what it takes. So it's an awareness to be able to compartmentalize what's going on so that you can focus on others and grow your business. And then the other thing that I find is that we get onto this treadmill where we're doing things that used to work or that we think we need to do. And I talk about this in one of the chapters in the book, is sitting down. Earlier you and I were talking about sitting and just thinking, is really analyzing what I do in my business. Where am I spending my money? Where am I spending my time? In what areas? And who am I spending it with? So sometimes we can improve what we're doing if we stop and think and say, okay, these clients are not good clients and not worth my time in the long run. if I freed myself up from all the drama and all the abuse they're giving me, then I could go find two or three more clients that weren't like that, or at least one that would replace them. If I really took the time and energy that I was using to deal with that person and spent it on other relationships or developing new relationships. We do the same thing with prioritizing our tasks. What is really going to help me get to where I want to go right now versus what I think I need to do. Some things, so in our business, an agent can spend a ton of time designing marketing materials or putting together presentations, kind of getting ready to get ready, when what they really need to be, because they want to make sure, let's say a presentation, spend all this time on my presentation because if I ever get there, I'm going to need it. Well, what I really should be doing is taking that time and a full day that I was using on a presentation and invest in talking to more people or holding an open house or doing something that will put me in front of people that will actually that might actually have a need. So I think we look at who we're working with and decide who needs to go and who needs to stay, redirect some of that energy. We look at the activities that we're doing on a day-to-day basis and say, which one am I doing out of superstition, which one am I doing out of habit, and which ones are really working that I need to take my efforts and focus on what's really working. You have the discipline to do that in terms of actions. And then if you have a business where you're spending money, so real estate agents, for example, would spend money on online services, magazine ads, paper ads, you know, in the newspaper, those types of things. And then it would be a matter of, okay, I need to see which one of these is really paying a return. Is my investment in these marketing promotional things really working? If it's not, I need to stop right now and then either redirect the money or save the money for something that, you know, that's coming down the road or something up, you know, maybe to pay my rent or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, but primarily three things. You know, I want to evaluate the people I'm spending time with, and is it a good idea? I want to evaluate the activities and the actions that I'm spending my energy on, and then I want to evaluate the marketing and promotions where I'm spending money to see if that's really what I need to do, and then redirect all my energy, attention, and money on the things that pay the highest leverage. And I think we get so caught up, right? It's good common human nature in the chase, in the running, in survival, you know, that we need to sit down and, you know, take inventory in these three areas and then make the changes, you know, and then move forward from there.
Ken, age 4, 3:42 p.m. on Christmas Eve. You have a story for us.
Yes. On Christmas Eve, I was 4 years old and I burnt my house. We had a little bungalow in Pacific Beach, California, which is where I grew up, and I burnt my house down to the ground on Christmas Eve, and the way that I did it was my mom was sleeping with my sister. It was nap time, and I woke up, and I went into the living room, and I turned on a little black and white TV, and there was a pirate movie on, and they were boarding ships, and the ships were on fire. And because it was around Christmas time, there was a big box in the living room that was empty and hadn't been thrown out yet. I don't know. I don't remember what it was for. So I climbed into it, and that was my pirate ship. I was watching a movie, bouncing around on my little pirate ship, 4 years old. But I thought, oh, but my ship's not on fire. So I went into the kitchen, and I went into the trash and got out an S&H sugar box, lit it in the pilot light of our hot water heater, and then walked in the living room and threw it into my box to set it on fire. And, of course, it did set on fire. Got out of control. I went into the kitchen, got a glass of water, couldn't put it out. Woke up my mom. She grabbed my sister. You know, at the time I was 4, she was probably 2.5. Ran outside, and then the whole damn thing just burnt to the ground.
Wow.
Nobody got hurt, except for I think one of the firemen had smoke inhalation.
Wow, what a story.
I remember it like it was yesterday. Or at least I remember how I remember it.
Exactly. And like you say, you just remember it like it was yesterday, and this is something that I want to know, Ken, that particular incident,
mm-hmm.
how is that reflecting on your life now?
That's a good question. It makes for a great story, I think.
It makes for a great story, but what does it do to you? You're still talking about it.
Yeah.
And you still remember.
I think the reason I like to talk about the story is, you know how if you've ever been in a group setting where people, where they say, well, let's get to know each other. It's kind of like an icebreaker, right? Mm-hmm. And they say, tell us something that no one knows about you that might be interesting. And you listen to stories, and what you realize is that everybody's got a story that everyone goes like, wow, are you kidding me? Right? Those are the ones we can tell anyway.
Yes.
And so I think that for me, that's one that really sticks out that not many people have done. And it is really just kind of a way to share, you know, the crazy things that that can happen to people. And it's amazing that all of us are still alive, if, you know, of all the things that, you know, that have gone on over the years that we probably were involved in. So that's really it, just to kind of get to know me.
The thing is, Ken, we had talked earlier in this conversation about getting people to know you, like you say. Now, I've heard the story before. I remember it. I may not remember your name, or I may remember your name, but I may not remember who you work for, but I do remember your story.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know what you do. So because of that story, it's that top mind awareness, I think. And I'm going to, when if I need a real estate agent, I'm going to call you. I'm going to look for you.
Right.
And if I met you at a party, but I can't remember really who your name, what your name is, but I remember that story, I will go to the people that had the party or were there, and I'm going to start inquiring. So that's,
right,
I think, also the importance of having stories like this.
Right, right. Well, there's certainly, yeah, I mean, because when I think I was using that kind of, the, you know, the story of Icebreaker, I know is I was in one group setting where they were doing that, and one of the women, her name is Margot, told a story about how she shot an intruder, right, mm-hmm, coming into her house. You know, she's a Texan. And
okay.
I mean, it stuck with me, but the memory thing stuck with me. It still sticks with me, you know.
Yeah.
And so you hear these, some of the other stories, some are good and some are bad. But you're right, there is a kind of an anchor, mm-hmm, I guess, that's established. Maybe that's kind of the third gravitating body that I did a poor job of explaining earlier, that sticks and it's memorable, right, a little bit remarkable because it's odd and it has a happy ending, so nobody got hurt, you know, and I wasn't being evil because I was a little kid. And you know, what's interesting about that more powerfully, which probably has to do with the difference between telling and showing, is that on my website, you know, you have about me, we all have, if you have a blog or whatever, there's an about me section, and so I tell that little story in there. But to make it even more powerful, because I'm sure some people go like, oh yeah, did you really do that or whatever, is that I have a link on my blog, which is brandcandid.com. And if you click on the about me, that little story's there. But there's a link to the newspaper article about the fire. And I'm standing in front of the house, you know, I got this sad little look, and there's a burnt red wagon next to me, you know, and you could see that there's been a fire and the fire hoses are around and so on. And, you know, it says, Kenny says, Santa will still come.
Oh.
You know, so what's cool about that is it's one thing to tell the story,
yeah,
but when people see the link, right, or they see the article, it goes even deeper and deeper and deeper in terms of memory because of how it, you know, how it strikes someone, which is really kind of a testament, what you're saying, is the remarkable for top mind awareness, but also showing,
mm-hmm,
as well as telling makes things much more memorable and more powerful.
Yes, thank you so much. This has been such a wonderful conversation, and I know that our listeners are just like, whoa, I need to listen to this again because there is so much information. But before we close off, Ken, your website addresses, you've got Twitter, you've got LinkedIn. Tell us all about it.
Okay, great. So what I what you want to do, if you can, is try to get your name so that you have branding across, personal branding across different platforms, is like your user name. So I do believe in the power of social media and all that it offers. So you can find me on Facebook at .com/KenBrand. I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/KenBrand. My website, if you go to KenBrand.com, will take you to my blog site. Brandcandid.com also goes there. If you're interested in the book itself, it's available on Amazon, and I have a direct link for that. It's in Kindle and print, and that is lesblahblah.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, and Ken Brand is my username there as well.
That's great. And listeners, the book that we've been talking about is Less Blah Blah, More Aha. And the subtitle is How Social Savvy Real Estate Agents Become Trusted, Preferred, Referred, and Rewarded. And as if you've heard so far, Ken is really talks in a very unconventional voice in the book, as he does in this interview, and I know that you will really find it, you're going to get a lot of ahas. I did when I read the book, and it's like, whoa, yeah, of course, and made all these notes and little sticky notes on in the book. So I do encourage you to go to Ken's website, and it's brandcandid.com, or if you just do kenbrand.com, it'll take you exactly to his website, and I encourage you to actually check out this book. And just because he wrote it to real estate agents, he had to write it to somebody as a core, but it really, really doesn't necessarily mean that it's strictly to real estate agents. I know that anybody that has a service or is trying to sell anything, and for instance, as authors, books, there is just so much information that we can get out of it, and if we follow, I know that we certainly will be successful. Ken, any last-minute thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity to share with your listeners. I appreciate all the good work that you do, to Irene. I had a lot of fun. And I just want to wish everybody great speed and success as they move forward.
Great. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.